Hey, kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grunt Boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast. That's right, we're the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond, and the new episodes when they air. Why do we do it that way? Well, you see, the entity known as the Wheel of Random cursed us to only watch episodes from those seasons, because plenty of other podcasts out there have discussed the golden age, that being seasons 1 through 10, so we're tasked to find if there's any gems out there that can match those golden age episodes. And when I say we, I'm not talking about me as we, because we as me can't do this alone. I'm just one annoyed grunt boy named Craig. With me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy,
Steve, and I is I. How's it going, Craig?
Steve, I think you know how it's going. We are kind of full right now of some burgers and brew.
Yeah.
We just returned back from John's Market here in Southeast Portland, where it was the launch of Level Beer's steamed ham lager with the help of the great Bill Oakley. So they had the launch of the beer, and there was also some burgers to accompany the beer at the little food cart, pod cart, I guess they're called, right?
That's right. It was a local food cart named JoJo's, which is one of our better known food carts, although we have plenty here in Portland, but they specialize in JoJo potatoes, which are kind of a regional delight, as well as chicken sandwiches that are just god-awfully big but delicious. And for this outing, they've made some steamed hams, or burgers, if you will. One, a duplicate of McDonald's quarter pounder with cheese called the Jorder pounder with cheese, and the other being an homage to Burger King's Whopper called the Jopper.
So Steve and I had one of each. I mean, just one each. Yeah. Not, although, honestly, I probably could have had another.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good sign then. Like, yeah, give me more. Mm-hmm. But I had, look, there's video accompanying this that is either on our YouTube now or will be, or hasn't been posted because the audio might have been crappy. I don't know. I haven't watched it yet. But eventually we got actual footage we'll put on our YouTube, youtube.com/@138Simpsons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, Bill Oakley was there. We saw him. But we're too much of a, we're too chicken shit to go up and talk to the man. We've talked to him before.
Yeah.
But we just have the feeling of like, look, he doesn't want to be bothered, even though plenty of people were going up to him and talking to him. I just don't want to be that guy being like, hey, Bill, can you come on our podcast?
We have a podcast. Can you talk to us?
It's like, what are we going to ask him? You know, probably questions that would make sense. Like, how did you get in contact with Level Brewing? How did your flavor profiles of beer? Like, what kind of beers do you like? I mean, we don't have any questions to ask, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, I guess those are our questions, aren't they?
Yeah.
Could you come on the podcast and talk about episodes that you didn't write? See, he doesn't fit with this show, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, what you could ask him as a classic Simpsons writer, what are your thoughts on the modern age?
Sure, we could have asked that. We could have asked, how does he balance life and work?
How's his new car driving?
His thoughts on the WGA strike.
Yeah.
What he thought of our t-shirts. No, we didn't want to interrupt him, and now our fans are probably pissed off because we could have talked to him, and we know that Bill probably would have been happy enough to talk to us, but
look, we just didn't want to start a media circus, you know. If you get too many celebrities in one spot, it gets a little crazy. Yeah. And so we thought we'd keep in guy incognito mode because we were dressed like Homer Simpson.
You know, once we have like a Tim Long or a Ryan Coe have their own beer,
yeah,
then we should probably talk to them because we talk about their episodes.
Right. And, you know, Ryan Coe can have, you know, his own food thing, like, I don't know, Ryan Coe Coco.
In collaboration with the office ladies, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but we had a lot of fun. I guess we'll just merge everything right now. This is our beer corner. So when it comes down to it, Steve, what do you think of the Level Brew, the steamed ham?
It's a great, really refreshing beer, really crisp, a little hop forward in the front, but finishes clean. It's a very classic summertime beer. I think it's what you want Duff maybe to be, but not necessarily what Duff is, because I think it's an elevated flavor from that.
Yeah, I think what's nice about it is it's a nice, refreshing light lager, but it doesn't taste like the big guys, like a Bud, a Coors. That just tastes too watered down. This one, like, you're actually tasting a beer flavor, but in a light, refreshing way. So I think it's definitely the brew of the summer.
Yeah, so the copy reads, "We've been working with Bill Oakley for a year to come up with the best lager to pair with a hamburger. This is it. Clear, clean, and crisp, and bitter with the pleasant, earthy, floral, and spicy hop flavors and aromas." And I think they got it down right, you know?
Definitely, definitely. Very hoppy. It's what you imagine a beer should taste like. It's just like that kind of classic American lager.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely paired well with the hamburgers. I mean, the steamed hams.
Right.
And we knew it was a hit because we got there probably, the event was from 11 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there maybe at 1.
Maybe even a little bit before.
A little bit before that, but they were already getting close to selling out the beers.
Yeah. Now, fear not, Timothy, because I'm working with our local distributors to try and get it to our store. So hopefully we'll be able to sell it there. But hopefully they made enough, because I would imagine that they made a few cases because they are talking about distribution. So hopefully we'll be able to have it again.
Hey, speaking to Timothy, he sent us a nice little message there on Twitter. So why don't you read it?
Oh, sure.
To our fans.
Thank you to everyone who always reaches out to us. So he says, and I quote, "Annoyed Grunt Boys, thanks for a fantastic season finale. The enthusiasm you had was, as the saying goes, infectious, and was a ray of sunshine on an otherwise cloudy day." Very nice of you. "I wonder by any chance, as either of you patrons of the Simpsons Show podcast, they drop a new episode reviews as bonus content around the same time as your episodes come out, and it never fails to confound me how you guys seem to be watching totally different programs." Well, they didn't hate it, saying a lot for them. They were decidedly tepid about it. "Speaking of Patreon, I hope to give advance notice to be the first in line. Now, I hate to be pedantic, but I'm afraid one of you is going to have to be fired for your blunder. In the poker game in hell, that was Stalin, not Lenin. You know I only pointed out to clear the record. Cheers, lads."
Boy, I really hope somebody got fired for that blunder.
Look, it's on us. It's not just Steve who wrote the notes out. It's my bad, too.
Yeah, as soon as we were done recording, I was like thinking, I'm pretty sure that I got it wrong.
I'm still on Homer's side. I think that was Tom Selleck.
I mean, it could be, you know, he's probably burning in hell. But thank you for pointing out the mistake. And I always appreciate to know when I make a mistake so I can correct it. So thank you, Timothy. And also for the kind words. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. As for listening to other Simpsons podcasts, I think we've probably maybe talked about it before, but the only other Simpsons podcast I listened to was Round Springfield with Allie Gertz and Julie Prescott. And their format was a lot different because it was just a celebrity guest or guest that had been on The Simpsons or someone related to it and talking about one episode they got to choose. And I always liked that format. I thought that was a great format. But as for like just kind of podcasts like ours that just generally do review episodes of The Simpsons, especially like the newer ones, I can't really listen to them. And it's nothing to do with content. It's the fact that I don't want to be swayed a certain way. Mm-hmm. If I listen to certain guys or gals and they make a point of an episode that I didn't think of, and then me going on my podcast and saying the same thing just because that's what they said. I have nothing against other Simpsons podcasts, and they're all great, and obviously probably all better than ours, but I listen to a lot of other podcasts, but Simpsons-wise, I just stick with just doing this one.
Yeah, I like to always check out different Simpsons podcasts, but it's hard to keep them on the regular, because like you say, I'm so concerned about inadvertently, like, swapping somebody's ideas for my own, or, you know, kind of being influenced. So I do like to go in blind as a critic, but I do from time to time like to hear other people's thoughts. And I've heard a little bit of The Simpsons Show, and they do a great job, as does, you know, Talking Simpsons and Four Finger Discount and so many others. So it's an honor to be among that community.
If there's Simpsons podcasters out there listening to this one and you guys want us on the show, let us know, and vice versa. Like, I think one of the things that we haven't done and I'd like to do is just reach out to other Simpsons podcasters so we can like kind of have like a fun little episode together and just talk about an episode. And if they have varying degrees, it'd be great, you know, to talk to people about this. So
yeah.
What Steve and I have always kind of thought, or wanted to do on the show was really just, even if there's an episode that we don't like and we can easily, you know, shit all over it, like we're looking at you, Brazil episode, whenever we get to you, we try to find the good out of the bad, but we still don't find that much bad. And we'll point out things if we don't think they're, like this week's episode, we might point out some problematic things.
Yeah.
But and all in all, we're just trying to find the good and the positive and make everything, make everyone happy. You know, there's enough and hate and bigotry and just like sadness in this planet. It's just, and we bring that shit up and it sucks that we do that sometimes, but you know, we want to be positive.
Yeah. And that's no shade to any of the podcasts that does want to, you know, dislike anything that they don't like. That's totally valid. And it's fair. And I think that's good to examine it. And I think just that, you know, our perspective is that we grew up loving The Simpsons and we want to keep on loving it and find the good. So that's just kind of our perspective. But I just think it's so cool that we have the format where somebody can, you know, have their own perspective on new episodes that are completely different from someone else's and that we all can listen to that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So to summarize, I like podcasts.
And you know what I like as much as podcasts, Steve?
What's that?
I like movies. So let's go back in the time machine.
Ooh.
To talk about this episode. We're going to go all the way back to May 5th, 2002, talking about movies in the box office. Steve, what was the number one movie for that week of May 5th, 2002?
Well, the number one movie is one that I know that you and I both saw, maybe not opening weekend, which this was, but, you know, shortly thereafter. And, you know, coming next year, there's a movie, or coming later this year, there's a movie with a similar character, the same character, really. Why, it's about our friendly neighborhood web-slinger himself, Spider-Man.
Yes, the first live-action Spider-Man theatrical movie, Tobey Maguire. I bet we did see this, like, opening weekend.
I do remember seeing it in the theater, yeah.
It's such a big movie that I definitely, like, got to see Spider-Man.
And I still think, I know that there's been so many superhero movies since 2002, but I still think both the first two Sam Raimi Spider-Man, or Spider-Mans, still rank pretty high up in, like, the best of comic book movies, in my opinion.
I think two definitely over the first one. I've recently rewatched the first one, and there is some sort of like not bad things, just like we've gone better, but yeah. Like the second one's still pretty good. And like, we'll date this real quick, but I think, is it the week, probably this weekend in real time, I think Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse 2 comes out. And I mean, that Across the Spider-Verse, or Into the Spider-Verse, was one of my favorite movies when that came out. So
oh, yeah. I think,
looking forward to seeing that one.
Into the Spider-Verse was a huge movie for me because it really cracked open my love of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me, that's what, that movie is what got me into reading Spider-Man from the beginning. And also it actually got me back into video games, because as I was like looking into more Spider-Man stuff, I heard about the PS4 game and I played that, and that's where I like kind of reignited my love of video games. So Spider-Man's huge for me, especially Into the Spider-Verse, so I can't wait to see the new one.
We might have to do an Eye Off Springfield.
We might just have to, actually.
We might too. All right, well, we all enjoy the Spider-Man.
But while we were enjoying Spider-Man, what were we listening to on our car stereos that had the removable faceplate at the time?
We were definitely on Z100, because they were probably playing Foolish by Ashanti. Baby, I don't know why you're treating me so bad. Probably wasn't listening to Ashanti in 2002. How about you?
Yeah, I don't think I was, but I mean, it's perfectly cromulent pop song for the time.
Yeah, fun stuff. What a time to be alive. May 5th, 2002. Both our parents were still alive.
Mm-hmm.
We were living our early 20s, just watching Spider-Man and listening to Ashanti.
Yeah, it was a good time. A simpler time. Perhaps a better time.
I mean, we did have that George W. Bush in office.
It's true.
And we were all prideful with America. You know, we were all like, America, yay. Fuck you, France. We're going to rename your fries Freedom Fries. Were we eating Freedom Fries during this time?
We may have been, yes.
All right. Well, see, let's just get on with this week's episode. The Sweetest Apu, in which Marge and Homer desperately try to get Apu and Manjula back together after she catches him cheating on her at the Quickie Mart, thanks to security tape.
Wow.
All right, Steve, let's... Well, we already finished our beers. Oh, no. What are we going to do?
Be real thirsty.
Get more beer?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea.
All right. We're going to go get another beer and come back.
Sounds good.
But we won't tell you what it is, right?
No.
Okay. All right. So let's take a break and come on back. And we're back. Today we're talking about The Sweetest of Pooh. It's the 19th episode of the 13th season, originally aired May 5th, 2002. It's episode 288 in the show's run. The nerd code is DABF14, written by one John Schwartzwelder, directed by Matthew Nastuk, and the showrunner is Al Jean.
Oh boy, John Schwartzwelder, John Joseph Schwartzwelder Jr.
That's my name too.
Hey, born February 8th, 1949. He's, you know, a Simpsons icon. What can I say that hasn't already been said? He's a writer, a novelist. Woozle Wuzzle. Eh, makes me laugh. No, he's the famous recluse who's written some of your favorite episodes of The Simpsons. He's written 59 episodes total, and we can review 15 episodes, and this will be the fifth one that we've reviewed. We've already talked about Take My Wife's Sleaze, Kill the Alligator and Run, the infamous Simpsons Safari, the Frying Game, and the Regina Monologues.
Which was his last episode he ever wrote.
Indeed.
All the way back in 2003. What would it take for the Simpsons to be like, hey, John, I know you're in your 80s. Write us one more. But if he did, it'd be like total like right-wing conservative.
I say this only probably because I think he's a cool guy, even though he's conservative. But I assume that he's like not Trumpy, but maybe he is. I don't know.
Would it be worse if he was Trumpy or DeSantis-y?
Ooh, it's a fair point. Ah, not a political podcast, but what a vile party that is.
Reminds me of the parties I used to throw in high school. Vile. I don't know what that means. I didn't throw parties in high school.
What are parties?
I wasn't even invited to parties in high school. Yeah. Just think, Steve, if we were still in high school, we'd probably have a Simpsons podcast.
It's true. We'd still, probably still be dorks.
Yeah. It's fun to know we have, what, 10 episodes we can review left in the Schwartzwelderverse.
Yeah.
I mean, if we ever do a Patreon, I would say that for the Patreon exclusives, we would do all the Schwartzwelder episodes.
Yeah, we should do a sideshow called, like, the Schwartzwelder Files, and we can review his Simpsons work, his novels, his, like, failed Western pilot, and anything else he's done.
You know, I think we kind of discussed that like way back in the day on this podcast.
Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, one of these days we keep threatening a Patreon to the maybe one subscriber we will get.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be two, but my mom's dead. So.
Yeah. And my friends wouldn't know what a computer was.
No, your mom knew what a computer was. It was the thing that played cribbage and casino games.
Exactly. Yeah. Mom, slot machines.
Yeah, mom, it's also a word processor. What am I going to do with that?
Yeah, my mouth is a word processor. I don't need that.
Yeah. Well, hey, Steve, it's fun to go back in time, right?
That's right.
With good old Schwartzwelder. Let's see if this lives up to, like, we probably say it every, you know, talk about it every time we have an episode with Schwartzwelder, but what is your go-to Schwartzwelder, like your number one episode?
Oh, boy. It's so tough. I mean, Homer at the Bat is pretty classic. Rosebud is always good. Bart Gets an Elephant.
I mean, arguably, too, like, I feel like Bart the General from the first season is probably like the strongest episode of season one.
Yeah, I that's one that I think of most often, probably. You also have like Homer's Enemy and.
Oh, classic.
Homer versus the 18th Amendment. And there's just so many good ones.
So in Bart the General, like that's the first appearance of Herman.
Mm-hmm.
Is that essentially just like Schwartzwelder is Herman, like his persona?
I think so.
That's the character he relates to the most.
Right.
You know, Homer at Bat, I think you might be right. I love Brother, Can You Spare Two Dimes? Mm-hmm. No, he did Whacking Day. That's a controversial episode.
Mm-hmm. People don't like Barry White.
No. I mean, I know it's from like season 9, but I still think The Cartridge Family was a great episode about gun control. So,
yeah.
Oh, we're done. You only moved twice. That's the number one episode. That's what all the fans are saying, that the screaming at the top of our lungs. Like,
right, right.
It's you only moved. Did you say you only moved twice?
I don't think so. I saw it and I was going to mention it and then I got distracted. But yeah.
Oh, is there a squirrel outside of your window too?
Yep.
Yeah. But, you know, what about, I can't say what about from the episodes we could review because we can't give it away, because who knows, maybe the lastest gun in the West is Steve's favorite. Or maybe my favorite is Hunka Hunka Burns in Love.
Yeah, maybe we love Mr. Spritz Goes to Washington.
But we all know it's really the computer war man's shoes.
That's right.
Well, let's just get to the episode. Steve, we got a chalkboard gag.
Oh, boy.
The Bart writing on it saying, I will never lie about being canceled again. Sadly, Bart was canceled in 2016 when it was revealed that he would masturbate in front of the Simpsons staffers. As what? Oh, that's a joke. I really should read ahead. Wait, so it's 2003. Was there a joke where The Simpsons was canceled?
There was probably like rumors about it. You know, it happens from time to time. I tried to do a search and I didn't really find anything. But I think that just, yeah, probably the rumors that the long running show might come to an end. And then it reveals like, oh, nope, they're going to be back.
And now with AI, it'll never go away.
Sure. It's not a problem at all. And it's completely good and fine.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I kind of thinking about it. I just kind of want movie producers, the people that run the studios, to make the money. They don't need writers.
It's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't support the WGA. I support billionaires making more billions.
Okay, Aaron Sorkin.
I didn't hear what did he say.
He's basically what you just said.
Really?
Yeah, he's a piece of shit. I mean, he's a brilliant writer, but yeah, he doesn't think that writers' rooms deserve any credit, and he thinks that the strike is dumb.
So did he not actually like write all the first like four seasons of West Wing? He had the writers' room and they did it, but he took the credit.
Uh-huh. I mean, he's like, hey, guys, I love all this political talk, but what if they were walking down a hallway really quickly while they say it? Like, huh, good idea.
Well, I guess, I mean, that's true. You know, if you think about one person can't just do all that, right?
No.
So does it mean like Twilight Zone wasn't all written by Rod Serling? It was all like writer's rooms too?
I mean, probably. I'm not entirely sure how TV worked back then, but, you know, there were probably a staff of writers like, you know, working on things. It might have been his like brainchild, but it takes a village to, you know, make a whole thing.
I know that, back in like, say, the 50s and 60s, like if you worked on a late night daily or late night talk show, I know that it was usually just three writers, two men, one woman.
Right.
And they had like a nice big office. They worked together and then, you know, they'd come up with like little ditties and start dancing, playing piano. It was a daily, you know, that's how life was back then.
Right, right.
And even like one of the writers' wives was like talented and she could sing and dance too. So they would just like get together and just start singing songs and have this choreographed dance, you know, every few days. It wasn't obnoxious at all, even though it was a great TV show.
Like one of the best, but yeah, not completely reasonable and fine. And you come home, tell your child to go away, and that's your day.
As much as I like the Dick Van Dyke Show, if I knew Rob and Laura Petrie in real life, and they would just like we'd get together with him, and they'd start like singing and dancing and piano, I'd be like, I'm kind of embarrassed for you guys. I don't want to see this.
Yeah. At a certain point in your life, you're like, oh, anytime people perform like that, just not on stage, but just like, oh, hey, I'm going to bust out the guitar or the piano. Like, ugh.
My favorite scene in any movie is still Animal House when Belushi, when the guy's playing the guitar and Belushi's like, can I see that? And just bashes the guitar. that's how I feel when I see people.
Yeah, people are the worst.
I don't mind street performers. Like, I'm not going to go up to a street performer and do that. But if, if I'm at a get-together, I'm at a party and some dude starts playing a
Wonderwall.
That's why I was never invited back to Noel Gallagher's birthday parties.
Sure, that's why.
Because I'm friends with his brother, the other
right,
guy.
Liam.
Liam, yeah. We're having too much fun, Steve. We did our chalkboard gag. Was there a couch gag?
There sure was. The family arrives to find two repo men carrying the couch away. And so Homer cries over this, but the kids just sit on the floor. They adapt and they just watch some TV.
I remember when you were a kid, like you could just like sit down like that, like, and you're fine.
Right. Just sitting on the floor was just another option. Yeah.
If I have to sit on the floor, I look at the floor. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to get up from this if I have to sit on a floor.
So far away down there.
Yeah. And it's uncomfortable.
Like, what do I do with my knees?
Yeah. Aging is fun, right?
Yeah, it's the best.
All right. Well, let's get to the episode proper. And it begins, as it always does, with the Nahasa Pitapetilon octuplets running amok while Apu tries to run his job at the Quickie Mart. So Apu feels that this is his special time with his wife. But Manjula is disgusted by watching Apu selling fatty poisons to overfed Americans, such as comic book guy, who's squirting nacho cheese on some chips. And then topping that off with a few donuts, then adding some more cheese.
Yum, yum.
Yeah, Steve, I'm going to get you fat this record. So I made that for you. Here's some nacho chips with nacho cheese and some donuts on top.
Ah, fatty and delicious.
All right. You'll have to rank all the snacks I gave you throughout this episode.
Okay. One point of order, or one thing to note, is that is Tress playing Manjula. She started playing her around this time when Jan Hooks did not. So initially it was Jan Hooks, but she stopped doing it in like 1999. So
then she kind of came back too, right?
She did, but they never really addressed Jan Hooks's passing in 2014 in relation to Manjula, because by that time Apu was already being phased out, so they're by de facto Manjula was also phased out.
Were we really phasing Apu out in 2014? I don't think we were. Were we?
Well, let's see. When did Jan Hooks pass away?
2014.
Yeah. They were like not canceling him, but they were using him a lot less, because that was still kind of in the cultural conversation about how he may or may not be problematic.
Right.
Although it wouldn't really officially happen until like 2017 when Harikon Balu's film, The Problem with Apu, came out.
Okay. But they never addressed why she stopped doing the voice?
No, not really. I think probably just a unavailability thing, because I think that Jan Hooks resides in New York, so, or did anyway.
Yeah, maybe it was too expensive. Maybe they were just not offering her the money she wanted. Maybe that was it.
Yeah. And they're like, Jan, you're off the hook.
One of the best SNL performers.
Yeah. Grossly underrated, I feel like.
Yeah.
Doesn't get the credit she deserves.
I mean, she's still no Victoria Jackson, but who is, right?
Exactly. Great woman. Great, great, great politics. So Apu begs Manjula to take the kids home, especially since the porno magazine buyers, such as Mo, are too embarrassed to buy anything.
If you guys notice in the background there, that's Stephen Craig ourselves. We're back there too, the embarrassed porn guys. I'm wearing the vest. We look different back in this year. We don't look like that now, obviously. So
right. This is and we had to dress up for our cameo.
Yeah,
I'm the guy in the sweater.
Yep, yeah. That was when you still had hair and you dyed it black.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I used to have like long sideburns like that in the early 2000s.
Sure, yeah.
I couldn't grow a mustache, then that's how it would look.
Yeah, exactly. And you love your vests.
Remember my green vest?
Oh, yeah.
And then the guy holding the candy bar, that's... I wonder if those actually are like caricatures of like writers at the time.
I mean, we've seen animated Storm Shoulder before. And while it's not exactly him, the guy in the vest kind of resembles him.
Yeah, that has to be an inside joke right there, those caricatures.
Yeah. So once the octuplets are gone, Apu calls for cleanup in all the aisles. And since he's the only one working, he gets to clean the whole store. And once he finishes mopping up, he's greeted by Homer and Bart, who are dressed in Civil War Union regalia.
Welcome, steady customer. I see you are ready for the Civil War reenactment.
I need some supplies. A keg of beer and a six-pack to hold me till I tap the keg.
Here you go.
Thanks. Are you sure you don't want to come? In a Civil War reenactment, we need lots of Indians to shoot.
I don't know which part of that sentence to correct first, but I cannot come. I work 22 hours a day, and then I go home to a wife who will not touch me. The Indian rope trick has become the Indian nope trick.
Hi-yo! The squishy lady! Oh, my God. I know you must get this all the time, but can I suggest a flavor?
Go ahead.
Grape.
Mm.
Hello, Annette.
How's life, handsome?
Oh, take a penny, leave a penny. Eh? She called me handsome.
She likes you. Put in a good word for Grape.
Come on, guys. We're going to be late.
Okay. Don't go marry Todd on us.
All right. What a long clip, Steve, to start off the show.
There's just so much good in there.
And so much bad?
Maybe. We'll start off with Homer's idiocy about inviting Apu to the Civil War reenactment because they're gonna need a lot of Indians to shoot.
I just love the exasperation from Apu.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know where to begin. This is a peak dumbass Homer, right?
Yeah. We're kind of out of jerkass Homer and into dumbass Homer.
What does Apu say about the rope?
The Indian rope trick turning into the Indian nope trick.
Yeah. And then Homer with Ed McMahon, heyo. I don't know. It seemed kind of racist, that whole joke.
It did. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a... this is a problematic episode, I'm going to say.
I don't know what the Indian rope trick is, whatever that means.
Yeah, neither do I. I'm sure it's...
racist?
Know. Yeah.
Okay.
I will put my phone into private mode while I look it up. so I don't get any lists or any invites to any sort of horrible things. It's a magic trick performed in and around India during the 19th century. And so a long piece of rope is left in a basket and placed in an open field, usually. So it's kind of like that old, like the snake coming out of the basket with the, well, somebody plays like a flute, but it's a rope. So it's like a dancing rope.
Okay.
And then an assistant would normally climb that moving rope. And so.
All right.
So we get to, we get introduced to the squishy lady, which always sounds funny to me.
Right. It sounds like, oh, she's just fun to squish.
Yeah. I'd love to poke her, said a poo. Foreshadowing. Also, the fact that Homer would suggest a flavor to her as a person who delivers the syrups. Like, I mean, that's a fine job, but she's not in our research and development.
It'd be like, you know, you get your... This reference is going to sound dated, but when the paper boy comes and delivers the paper,
right,
it suggests like, hey, son, can you get Marmaduke in this for the comic strips or something?
There are 20-year-old listeners saying, yeah. What's a paper?
Okay, let's try something that relates to the kids here. It's like when my daily TikTok comes and I tell the TikTok boy, we need more squishy boobs on TikTok.
There you go. That's perfect. Yeah.
All right. Good. Now it sounds like I'm hip and with the crowd.
You are bussin'. No cap. Also, grape is such a straightforward, obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why that joke works so well. It's just, what's such a mundane, like, basic flavor? Grape. I don't think I would do a punch up. Like,
no.
If you said like cherry, that's like not funny because that's like the common default flavor.
Right.
But grape, yeah. Come to think of it, have I ever had a grape Slurpee?
I don't. It's actually kind of a good idea.
Put some rum in it.
Oh, yeah.
You get yourself a grape daiquiri.
Sounds delightful.
Or any alcohol, gin, vodka, tequila.
Yeah.
And then add the squishy.
Mm-hmm.
Or not.
The grape mistake.
Oh, that should have been our cocktail.
I know.
All right, maybe some other time we'll do the grape mistake. Did it also sound weird when Homer told Lisa at the end, like, don't go Mary Todd on us? And like, I know he's talking about Mary Todd Lincoln, and the idea is like, don't go crazy, right? That's the joke,
right? Yeah.
It also sounds like, don't marry Todd Flanders.
That'll happen in season 35.
I was gonna say, has there ever been like a flash forward where maybe she married? That'd be weird. Why would she marry one of the Flanders kids?
Especially since they're both gay.
Okay, that's an interesting episode. Like, what if, like, I know there was an episode like where Rod or Todd like turned his back on Jesus, but like, what if there was an episode where, you know, it's always been said like they grew up to be homosexuals, but like, what if there was a future episode where Rod or Todd, like, when he got older, he did the opposite, you know, he did what his dad did too, like, was pissed at his parents, you know, Flanders was mad at his beatnik parents and became a Jesus kid. What if that happens to like Rod or Todd? Is like, I don't want to be Jesus kid, and becomes, you know, actually, this would be a good episode where he, you know, becomes an atheist, goes to like some liberal college, and then moves back to Springfield or runs into Lisa, and then they hit it off.
Yeah, they could like meet at like a book signing for some like famous atheist or something. And
yeah.
And then they could date, they could share memories. And yeah, I could see this as this would work well.
All right. Well, we can't write this now because of the WGA strike. That's at this time of record.
Right, of course.
But fun clip altogether, Steve. So at the Civil War reenactment site, the North and the South gather on their respective sides. Homer tells a sober Barney that if he's going to be a General Grant, he's got to take a drink. Barney reminds Homer that he is a recovering alcoholic, and Homer replies that one drink won't hurt. So Barney downs a stein full of Duff, and nothing happens. He's fine. So I'm wondering if this is like a Schwartzwelder type of mentality of like doesn't believe in addicts because, you know, you people can be strong enough to put something down, like they don't need a vice.
Yeah.
Or is he maybe mad at like them having Barney not be the drunk anymore?
Because Barney as like the town drunk feels like such a Schwartzwaldian idea.
Uh-huh.
It's so like classic, like Andy Griffith type of thing. We all laugh at the sot, the booze hound.
Right.
And that was like Barney's one character trait. So yeah, I feel like it's commentary on how John might have felt. Like maybe he felt that Barney was slighted as a character.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how this joke worked out.
It's just funny though. Also, I know that they probably still happen, but they're a lot more prevalent back
20 years ago. But the idea to me of a Civil War reenactment seems a little weird now for some reason. I don't know. It's just, maybe it's just the political climate that we're in today, but it feels like we're already doing that.
I don't think the Civil War reenactment fandom has ever waned. It's really popular, obviously, in the South.
Yeah.
And states that fought the Civil War was here in the Pacific Northwest. We don't have them, obviously, because...
That's true.
We didn't fight up here. I think the new Civil War reenactment that we should do is January 6th.
I was going to say Coke versus Pepsi, but you might be on something. So yeah, every year, just storm the Capitol.
Yeah.
That's an idea.
There's that great remote that Conan O'Brien did. Was it? I don't know if it was still with the late night show days, but it has to be, where he did one of the Civil War reenactments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I traveled to the South, you know, I'd probably go to Gettysburg and, you know, it's history.
It is.
I'd watch one, but it is very odd. Like, let's dress up. But, you know, a lot of people take it seriously. I don't want to badmouth it because it's such a...
Yeah, I mean...
We probably have Civil War reenactment listeners.
If that's your thing, more power to you. It's interesting. I'll say that.
What would you like to reenact through history?
Maybe a two-celled amoeba climbing out of the ocean and walking on its legs for the first time. No, that's history. That, or I just kind of reenact old episodes of Full House.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that's not TV or movie related that I would want to reenact. Like, maybe the Battle of Hoth from Empire Strikes Back. But that'd be a little too cold. How about the Return of the Jedi one with the Ewoks? Then you get to hang out with the Ewoks.
That sounds great to me.
All right, no, this is perfect. The Battle of Endor. So, you know how like people could dress up as North or South for the Civil War. This one, it's people, furries, dressing up as Ewoks. And then, or you could dress up as a Star Wars stormtrooper, and then you reenact the Ewoks versus stormtroopers.
That does sound like a good time.
Yeah, and you could do it in a forest. We have lots of forests.
Yeah.
All right.
I just want to ride a speeder bike.
Well, we don't have that technology, so we'll just like you have to actually ride a real bike through the forest.
All right, that's so cool too.
Are you gonna be a stormtrooper or a Ewok?
I can't join the Empire. I gotta be an Ewok.
Not even with the cool outfits they got. Like, stormtrooper outfits are neat.
They are pretty neat, but man, I just don't want to like work for the man. Yeah, I want to be a fuzzy little Ewok.
Yeah, all right. I'll be the Ewok. We could be Ewok bros.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I thought that like the bandoliers that they wore and like their little little handkerchiefs, like it's a good look.
And all we could walk around to saying yub nub.
Yub nub.
That's great.
Yeah, I think we settled it. That's the reenactment that we should do.
All right, so do we have enough time to organize it this summer?
Yeah, I'll place a few calls with my furry friends.
Well, I mean, we just post something on Craigslist. Is that still a website?
I think so, yeah. Like, it's your list, you should know.
Oh, yeah. So we'll just post a... The problem is, like, wearing the Ewok costumes and the Stormtrooper costumes in the middle of summer, it'll be hot. So maybe we should go to Hoth.
That's true, yeah.
It's cold. We'll do it like in October. Oh no, well, I want some foliage. Really, it should happen around like early spring. Like 3 weeks ago, it would have been perfect.
So we'll just shoot for next year.
All right, next year. We get a year in advance. The Battle of Endor recreation. This actually, you know, we're making a joke, but this could definitely be something that you'd see in Portland.
Like, oh yeah, for sure.
Like Forest Park. Well, rent an area out where we get like, we'll have, you know, some people as stormtroopers, right? And then you will have like a narrator, you know, like welcome everyone to the first annual Battle of Endor recreation. And then like treat it like the Civil War, like reenactments. So like the narrator would be like saying in 1983, or, you know, the cadence of that, if you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And like the Unipiper would show up. And for those who don't know, the Unipiper is a unicyclist who plays the bagpipes, usually while wearing a Darth Vader mask. And he's a Portland icon.
He'd be the only one we have to pay. So,
yeah, exactly.
We gotta get some money together. And I think this is a good idea.
I think it could work.
You know, set up like a day. It'll be like a Saturday from noon to three or whatever. That's come on, bring a picnic. Maybe we could get vendors. You know, there's plenty of like Star Wars fans, like especially the people that have like the stormtrooper outfits. There's plenty in Portland. You just like, we're looking for stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a volunteer thing, but somehow we can, you know, raise some money. Like, that's what it should be, is like raise money for like a charity. Now yeah. I'm actually beginning to like, okay, so like, let's raise money for like the children's hospital or something noble.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be the Annoyed Grunt Boys present because we can't get paid for it because we're using a licensed property of Star Wars. So like,
yeah,
it has to be volunteers and we cannot get paid, but there is money, but it's all for charity. So that, yeah. that way, like legality wise, like Disney can't come and sue us because we're not making a profit
mm-hmm.
off of their IP.
Right. Just like we've never made a profit off of this podcast.
Exactly.
Nobody likes us.
Because a few years ago, maybe like 10 years ago, they used to have every summer a group of actors would get together and do Star Trek in the park.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was, they would recreate or retell a episode of the Star Trek, the original series. And it was all it was free, you know, so you'd go to and watch it. So then, you know, Paramount, who owns Star Trek, couldn't sue.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be something similar to that. But like just taking the Battle of Endor and then making it a Civil War reenactment parody.
Right.
So we'd have to go and do some research, watch some YouTube reenactments and see how that, you know, works, and then just kind of parody that.
I don't mm-hmm.
know. I think it'd be interesting. This is what a long tangent we are. Hey, you're just hearing our ideas.
Yeah, that's right. But let's go back to Springfield, where in a nearby gazebo, Mayor Quimby acts as mayor, while Principal Skinner takes the role of referee. Skinner announces the Second Battle of Springfield, which was fought by the North, the South, and the East, who were sporting fashionable plaid uniforms. Great joke. These three sides help keep Springfield in, out of, and next to the Union, respectfully. He then points to a spot a few yards away where the actual battle took place, but unfortunately there's a man standing there in the field and he refuses to move.
This might be my favorite just like side gag.
Yeah.
The guy's just standing in the middle of the field with his arms crossed, like glaring.
Uh-uh.
Like, what is his deal? Probably my favorite character of The Simpsons from now on.
Yeah, really good. I think we can all learn a lot from that man.
So the mayor calls for the battle to be joined, and in a theater booth, a man portraying Abraham Lincoln shoots himself in the head. Jesus. But like, just another absurd joke. Like,
yeah,
like start the race, you fire the starting pistol, right?
Mm-hmm.
This one makes no sense.
Right.
If they wanted to have like a John Wilkes Booth like behind Lincoln and then shooting him in the back, that would have made sense. But like, I would just wonder if like Schwarzwater was like, you know, in the writer's room, they're like, what if he just shoots himself? Like, well, that doesn't make sense. That's not accurate. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's exactly how it went down. He's like, I don't care. I'm doing it.
There's two dark jokes in this episode. Well, this one is the darkest, and then there's later with Apu and
yeah.
the rope. So after Lincoln, you know, shoots himself in the head, like it happened. What if it was like Schwarzwelder was, that's a conspiracy nut. He's like, no.
Oh, yeah.
He actually did kill himself.
Right.
There was no John Wilkes Booth.
He had so much guilt about the Civil War.
Yeah. And didn't you know that after Lincoln freed the slaves, he still kept his like slaves?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the rumor. And remember, all you liberals hate the Republican Party, but you love Lincoln. He was a Republican.
Yeah.
It was the Democrats that were founded by the Klan.
Sure.
But we won't continue how the parties changed in the 60s. So
right. Let's keep our head in the sand and
yeah,
be an idiot.
Yeah, so the two forces face off, shooting each other and saying, you know, bang, bang, or shoot, which they probably don't do that in Civil War reenactments. And so Mo joins the fight, but he doesn't have a gun. Instead, he has a stick. So he kept saying, hit with stick. Well, the guy's just on the ground, like, stop it. You know, he's saying, die, you bastard. Very funny. I thought it would be funny if they switched sides, like, because Lenny is a Confederate and Carl's
right.
Union. But what if Carl was the Confederate?
What am I doing? Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that would have been funny. Anyways.
Yeah. So as Dr. Hibbert loses control of his horse and declares the war over for himself, referee Skinner scans his binoculars for inaccuracies. And when it comes to inaccuracies, this reenactment is rife with them. Dead people playing cards and Stonewall Jackson, as portrayed by Disco Stew, rollerblading to those funky disco beats and announcing that the South will boogie again.
I'm wondering if that joke with Skinner looking for inaccuracies with his binoculars, like those binoculars clearly probably weren't around in the Civil War.
Yeah, that's funny.
Binoculars were invented in 1823.
Oh,
by Friedrich Volklander.
So they would have been around.
Yeah, but maybe not
like those fancy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve, when did the American Civil War end?
I believe it was 1865.
No, Steve, it's never ended.
Whoa.
Look at it now.
Deep, man.
There's nothing civil about a war, man.
Yeah.
But I think Stonewall Jackson did ride around in roller skates, if I remember my history correctly.
Pretty sure, yeah.
That's how he got his name, Stonewall Jackson. There was a stone wall, and he was riding on it with his roller skates. Anyway, so Homer takes guard with his bayonet, but sadly, a rebel soldier sneaks behind him and stabs his keg, impaling it. Homer cries out that it's supposed to be a mock battle, and then he sucks out of the gaping hole in the keg, hoping to drain the area around the wound.
Oh,
it's cold, Steve. It's so cold. Anyways, the battle rages on. And on the other side of the park, Tom Brokaw commemorates the sacrifice of the so-called greatest generation.
We are gathered here this Memorial Day to once again honor you World War II veterans. Truly, you are the greatest generation.
Keep it coming, Brokaw.
Lauding your legacy is a labor of love.
You're damn right it is. You can't thank us enough.
Every generation stinks but ours.
Uh-oh. Sounds like America's enemies are at it again.
Greatest generation to the rescue! And when I come back, I want a foot rub.
Yes, master.
So is this kind of the Schwarzwelder's like take on how, you know, especially during this time, the greatest generation, you know, they were just making so many specials and things on TV. Mm-hmm. Just like, I get it. It's like Schwarzwelder's like, I get it. Yes. You guys fought World War II. Can we just like, did you accomplish anything else? Is that kind of
exactly
like what he's saying?
I think so. And like Tom Brokaw was like very, like he wrote a book kind of coining the term the greatest generation as like what the war vets were.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that it's at this time, especially, it was just kind of all shoved down our throats. I mean, thank you for your service. And, you know, the world stage is better because of it. But yeah, come on, guys. We get it. You won.
I mean, sure, you can be called the greatest generation, but it's your fault the boomers exist.
Exactly.
And in turns, we exist.
Yeah.
But we were the last generation not to be fucked over. I mean, yeah. We're the first modern generation where our elders failed us.
I mean, probably. At least really badly.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Gen X has got it pretty bad, too.
Yeah. I think everyone has it bad. We all hate everything.
Yeah, everything sucks.
It's probably the Gen Zers that are going to make this country great again.
Maybe not again, because maybe it never was.
I just hope that those Gen Zers in 2024 will stop playing Pokemon Go and start Pokemon going to the polls.
That's right.
And that reference is going to be old or outdated. I mean, it already is. No one gets it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is from like 2016, so nearly a decade ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah, almost is, right?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, give or take.
Yeah. So the Union surrounds the remaining Confederate soldiers, causing Lenny to offer his sword to Carl in an act of surrender. But he accidentally stabs Carl while doing so. But that's all soon forgotten as the World War II vets storm the fields in tanks, firing guns. The rebels assume the new battalion is reinforcement and rage on. And this is far too inaccurate for Skinner, who was certainly not like Professor Frank's steam-powered super spider, inspired by the infamous 1999 Will Smith flop Wild Wild West. That was always like a failure, right? Wild Wild West, like...
Yeah, no, it wasn't like a hit.
Right, okay. So the super spider attacks all sides, stomping on canyons and shooting its web made of nylon, ensnaring the Civil War reenactors.
There's a story Kevin Smith talks about when he was writing that Superman Lives project back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
That was for Tim Burton directing, and Nicolas Cage was supposed to be Superman. And then he was writing it. So one of the producers, John Peters, was telling Kevin Smith in the script, I want a giant mechanical spider in it. And also Superman has to fight a polar bear. So he told the story, like, include the giant mechanical spider. And so he included that in the story. And then, of course, Superman Lives didn't get made. And then Kevin was going on telling the story. He's like, then I went to see Wild Wild West with Will Smith. And the guy that was producing the Superman movie that was canceled also produced Wild Wild West. And what do you know, when I'm watching the movie, there's a giant mechanical spider in the movie. So he got his mechanical spider.
That's funny.
I think when that movie came out in 99, like, yeah, that even us as kids at the time were thinking like, oh, this looks horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I didn't go see it. I don't think I ever saw it, but I've seen clips, Mechanical Spider and everything. And then, you know, it was like trying to be Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, all right, Will Smith's Men in Black was a hit. Now let's recreate or redo the TV show Wild Wild West. We'll get Kevin Kline. He'll write, Will Smith will write a fun rap tune. We'll be, you know, we'll make millions like they did on Men in Black.
Right, exactly.
They probably actually wanted to get Tommy Lee Jones in there too. Like, let's just get him.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I never saw it. It's definitely an episode of How Did This Get Made, right? It was one of the original.
Like, yeah, I believe so.
Podcast, like, because that's just a top tier pile of garbage.
Yeah.
But is it as bad as, like, if we look at modern blockbuster movies?
It's hard to say. I mean, it probably has more practical effects, and it's probably visually not too bad, but...
Steampunk before steampunk was cool.
Yeah.
It's probably because of our age, too, but, like, blockbuster movies that are considered flops or not good still hold a place in my heart because we were kids. I don't think Waterworld's a bad movie.
Yeah, I agree. I think that movie got really unfairly maligned, like, because it was such a punchline because it was so expensive. But yeah, I think it's way better than we, like, remember it as.
Look, if it's on TV, I'll watch it. Yeah. It has fun action set pieces. It's on water, but still, at the time, yeah, it was expensive, but it's a fun adventure story. You know, what's his name? Dennis
Hopper.
Yeah. I mean, Dennis Hopper just hamming it up is a great villain. I loved it.
Yeah. Another one. If you're ever at a Universal Studios, it's a fun show.
Yeah. And like Hook. I think Hook's a great movie. You know, that was critically panned.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because we were kids.
Yeah.
And it's nostalgia. It's like how we don't understand just a few years later, like, people a little bit younger than us think like Space Jam is a great movie.
Right.
And we're like, what? No, it's not.
I think that's just objectively a bad film, though. Like, just such a cash grab.
And it's like amazing, like, you know, talking about Star Wars earlier, Gen Zers, or, you know, people that are in their 20s and 30s, like, think the prequel Star Wars movies are great because when they were kids, that's what they grew up with.
Yeah.
So it all comes back around. So everything that, you know, people give shit to, like, for, like, movies that aren't, like, some of the newer Marvel movies that no one likes, or some of the DC movies, I guarantee in, like, 10 years, people are going to start talking about how great, like, the Shazam movies were with Zach Levi. You know, even though, like, yeah, no one liked them now, in 10 years, some kid who's, like, 11 loves those movies. And then they'll be like, you know, 15 years, this is a huge hit. Let's make a sequel after 15 years.
Exactly, yeah. Everything bad is good.
Yeah. And it only took a few years for Andrew Garfield to come back as Spider-Man. And it was, like, in love with Andrew Garfield with Spider-Man. It's like, well, you know, 10 years ago, you guys were giving him shit because he wasn't Tobey Maguire.
Right.
But now those kids that grew up with those amazing Spider-Man movies are old enough to appreciate it and are vocal. So, yeah. But The Simpsons will always be here. And and so will we. Ugh. Homer instructs Marge to take the kids home while he returns the keg. Marge is concerned that due to the damaged condition of the keg, Homer won't be able to get his deposit back. And Homer's, like, taken aback, wondering why Marge always takes the side of local merchants. Another very fun delivery that Homer says, like, just local merchants.
Yeah.
It's a very funny joke. So at the Quickie Mart, Homer brings in the dented keg, loudly declaring the damage to Apu and offering the proof, hastily written handwriting etched onto the keg that says, "This keg had dents, signed Apu, spelled A-P-O-O. I like how Homer, just like, well, his name's Apu, so phonetically he'll spell that way, Apu.
And that he wouldn't remember writing that on the keg.
Homer really thinks that's how Apu spells his name. It's like, Apu. Yeah. Like,
Apu. Homer looks up to notice that Apu is not at the counter. He then hears a woman's laughter. Homer says to himself that giggle he heard is none of his business. Or is it? He hops over to the counter and opens a door marked "Keep Out" to find Apu and Annette, the squishy lady, deep in the naked throes of passion. Homer is stunned as Apu compliments Annette's vaginal width by remarking that she clearly has had less than 8 children.
What if Apu's just, like, really thick, too? Like,
could be, yeah.
Yeah. You know, now I'm thinking about it, Apu isn't really cheating, because if Tress is doing Manjula's voice and she's doing Squishy Lady's voice, how's he cheating?
That's right. Cheating with you, honey. Her voice sounded similar. So, yeah, that means that he could also bone, by your logic, Crazy Cat Lady.
Yeah.
And your favorite, Lindsay Nagel.
Yeah. That's how it works.
Yeah.
So still in shock, Hober steps away from the scene, walking backwards, knocking over a tower of canned food, then several other stacked products on display. He continues to walk backwards in a stunned state out of the Quickie Mart down the street and back to 742 Evergreen Terrace. He enters the house, still walking backwards, going up the stairs and into his bed next to a sleeping Marge. He's relieved to be home and instantly falls fast asleep. And then a dream bubble appears showing Apu and the squishy lady making out while Homer watches. And then Dream Homer begins to walk backwards.
When we found out that we were watching this episode, that was the one joke that I remember is the walking backwards thing.
I think the best part of that joke is the music sting, because it's that the dun 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 type of music, but then it's just repeated because Homer's still in shock walking backwards.
Yeah, really good. So the dream continues into our second act, which is a weird move to have a commercial break in between a dream. But it's Apu in a leopard skin loincloth, smoking a hookah and asking Annette to please do that Hindu that you do so well. So yeah, this whole dream sequence is probably problematic, but I figure since it's Homer's dumb dream, it's okay.
Yeah, it's Homer, just his ignorance.
Yeah, so Homer, dressed in what would probably be considered culturally offensive garb, is a eunuch watching on, despite Apu's wishes. Homer screams himself awake, wondering what a eunuch is. So he pulls out a dictionary, opening up to the U section and scanning through words such as unique and unite. He screams again, this time waking Marge.
Homie, what's wrong?
Nothing, nothing. There's nothing eating me up inside.
It must be something big. Something you did? No, something you saw. Apu is having an affair?
I know, can you believe it? Oh, Manjula's just gonna die.
How did you find out?
In my role as customer, I saw the whole thing.
Oh, this is so awkward. Today's the day we play badminton with them. Oh, I hope no one makes any double entendres.
Oh, Apu, you keep scoring while my back is turned. Are you sure you're not cheating?
No, Manjula. Do you want me to find another partner?
No. Let's just keep playing. What's the score?
Dirty love. I mean, 30 love. I mean, anyone for penis? I'll just get the shuttlecock. Oh.
Is this the ultimate sitcom gag?
Gag? Ooh.
Steve, are you for some penis? I mean, podcasting?
Let me just grab my cock microphone. It's not even witty.
we definitely are not witty. But, like, I just love how how do we get one of the seven words you can't say on television? Just so Homer could say cock, right?
Right.
Cock.
It's funny because I paused my TV and the closed captioning just says, I mean, anyone for penis? Wanted to look at.
You love when Homer says penis.
Mm-hmm.
Penis.
But just a whole fun bit of a gag, the whole clip there.
Yeah, and I liked it in the beginning with Homer's eye darting back and forth and just Marge being such a loving partner that she can understand his communication without words.
Yeah, and then the fact that she goes right to Apu having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it's funny, like, when it comes to couples and the people that they know, of like hearing that, someone's getting a divorce or they broke up, and it's like Marge's like, we need to get them back together. But like, why? Like, if a couple is breaking up, there's reasons like they're not happy. So you should be happy they're leaving a relationship, because don't you want people to be happy? It's like, no, right. I want them to be miserable and together.
It's a good point, because usually, like, if spouses are cheating on another, probably for the best that they split up.
Yeah. I ran into someone that I knew that we both know, and he was talking about another person that we know and that they're getting a divorce. And like, the first thing that comes to my mind is like, oh, that sucks. But it's like, does it? No, because they're getting a divorce for a reason. So it's good. Yeah. They're getting out of something they don't want.
There's a quote, and I hate that it's from Louis C.K., but it is.
Steve, jerk off in front of women.
Yeah. That's your point. He said, no good marriage ends in divorce.
Right. Yeah.
Which is, probably why he got divorced. But
yeah, there might be other reasons.
Yeah, probably. But just saying that, if a relationship ends, it's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, it probably will eventually turn out to be a good thing. Right. So, yeah.
So just Marge trying to make sure they don't get divorced. It's like that old concept.
Yeah, exactly.
Just butt out, Marge.
Yeah, mind your business.
Save your marriage.
That's probably why she is so eager to save other marriages, because she's so insecure of her own.
Absolutely. So later that day, Marge cries as she watches the video of Apu and Manjula's wedding. Homer leads the traditional Indian band singing
Luna Mezzo Mare,
a song best known from the opening wedding scene of The Godfather. So as Apu and Manjula kiss, Marge sobs. Homer walks away and wonders why his wife is crying, since she isn't in any physical pain. You know, the only kind of pain a man can understand. Marge wants to take action and considers talking to Manjula. She then thinks that Homer should talk to Apu, but, you know, Homer reminds her that he is already aware of the affair. Homer has another idea, but eventually meets up with Apu at Moe's.
Let's tell Krusty.
What would that accomplish?
That guy's hilarious. His reaction would be priceless. Apu is cheating.
That's sad. All those kids.
I think he's building to something. So anyway, if you take that bottle down and pass it around...
I know. There will be 47 bottles of beer on the wall. Yes. Homer, you did not bring me here for this. What is it that you want to tell me?
Okay, this isn't easy, so I'm just going to come out and say it. Let's say this Pepper got married to this salt shaker. And along comes sexy Mrs. Dash.
Homie, it's 11 at night. Have you told him yet?
A girl in the bar. What do we do?
Watch and learn, you dinks. Ma'am, is there something you want to tell me?
I saw you and that squishy lady canoodling like junkyard rabbits.
The scene with Homer and Krusty just so great. Like,
yeah,
when he just puts that when he tells Krusty and Krusty puts the glass down, just like puts his head down, shame. Like,
yeah,
it's sadness. And Krusty knows Apu and has the 8 kids. You know, Krusty forgets the Simpsons kids all the time,
right?
But there's like some weird like friendship that Krusty has with.
Like, oh, that, man, so tragic.
Yeah. And then it's like Homer, like, just like say something funny. It's a very funny, dumb scene again.
Yeah. I also like Mo donning the top hat.
Because that's what women like, right?
Yeah. So Apu admits his infidelity, saying that it only happened once, but he feels a great deal of shame. He calls himself scum, and Homer agrees. Marge tells Apu to end things with Annette, and Apu vows to do just that the following morning. Mo then offers Marge a tropical drink, and Marge sniffs the blue concoction and asks if it's Windex in the glass. And Mo explains that it's actually Windell, as he can't afford the name brand window cleaner. And Craig, as you know, a Windex cocktail is made up of an ounce each of vodka, triple sec, and blue curacao, as well as a half an ounce of lime juice. And Windell is the German word for diaper.
Ich spiele ein Windell.
You play in your diaper?
Windell, diaper.
So the next morning, Apu gathers his courage, ready to end things with the squishy lady. He tells Annette that he needs to talk to her before she checks his syrup levels. While Apu speaks, Annette grabs some licorice rope, and Apu gently says that he enjoys Annette's company, but before he can complete his thought, he sees that Annette has tied the licorice rope with her tongue to read, "Do me." Apu stammers nervously. Steve, I got you some licorice rope. Here you go.
Ooh.
Now do that thing with the tongue that Annette does. Oh, wow. Steve, instead of "Do me," he rewrote all of "War and Peace."
Mm-hmm.
That's how talented Steve's tongue is.
Yeah, but boy, my tongue tired.
Anyways, later that evening, Manjula struggles with her sleep. Was there any other food in this episode? I forgot to make you.
Oh, I mean, you could make me a Windex if you want.
Okay, all right. Here's a Windex. It's actually Windell.
No,
the German like Windell.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you've had a licorice rope, dirty diapers, and
dirty diapers.
All right. Oh yeah, one more thing you have to eat. Here's some Mrs. Fields. Put it on whatever you want.
Oh, thank you.
Is Mrs. Fields just like a mixture of like salt and pepper and like garlic powder?
You mean Mrs. Dash?
Mrs. Dash. That's what I meant. Not Mrs. Like, Fields.
Yeah, I think it's just like seasoning, salt, probably a little MSG in there. But wouldn't you think that she should be the one to be cheated on since she's married?
Oh, yeah. Who do you think she should date? Johnny's seasoning salt?
That old bay.
What is what's the sexiest spice, Steve?
Oregano.
I would say like smoked paprika.
Ooh, yeah, that is a good one.
What's the lamest spice?
Dill weed.
Yeah, I guess you're right. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
You're such a dill weed.
Dill weed.
I don't use a lot of mint. Dried mint.
It has very limited use, I feel. I agree. Right. My three go-to spices, like I use a whole lot of spices, but garlic powder, onion powder, and smoked paprika are probably like the three that I use most.
I use a lot of cumin, smoked paprika. Yeah, garlic powder goes through pretty fast at this house.
Yeah.
Basil and oregano get used a lot.
Sure, sure.
I'm a big fan of, it's limited, but I love a fennel seed.
Yeah, fennel's great. I also really love the seasoning powders that they have at Trader Joe's, like the elote corn seasoning and the ranch powder. Two very good seasonings.
I think I have some of that ranch powder somewhere, don't I?
Probably.
Anyways, later that evening, Minchula struggles with her sleep as something seems amiss.
Not tonight. I said not tonight. Wait, something's wrong. Why aren't you pressuring me for sex?
Oh, I'm just happy to lie here appreciating and respecting you.
Okay, Buster. What is going on?
Nothing. How can you even accuse me of repeated infidelity? Oh, I'm so angry I could fall asleep. Completely innocent.
Apu! Come here a moment.
This better be good because you are interrupting my faithfulness. Oh, boy.
I took the tape out of the store surveillance camera. Look.
Oh, Apu, scratch and win.
That's good adultery. Oh, I am so sorry, Manjula.
Oh, get out of my home, Apu.
Another Johnny Carson reference.
Hey, look, Johnny Carson was really popular in 2003.
Sure.
He was still alive.
Yeah.
For only a couple more years. Fun stuff there, Steve.
Really good stuff.
Like how just Apu's, oh, that's some good adultery, like you said.
Also, like him being defensive about his faithfulness. Like, it's almost like, why are you being so loud? I'm just trying to be faithful over here.
Yeah.
So Apu wistfully leaves his home, his children hissing at him as he goes.
I love how the kids know
what's
going on. Like, they know the infidelity.
So he arrives at the Springfield Bachelor Apartments, where the beds are the murfiest. As Apu looks over the dilapidated living space for lonely men, he tells Homer that he always thought karma was baloney, but not anymore. Homer then imagines caramel baloney while Apu settles in.
All right, Steve.
There
you go.
Oh.
Caramel baloney.
Smells bad. Tastes surprisingly good.
Yeah, it's not gross because it's salty meat with caramel sugar. Sweet and salty is perfect meal.
Yeah, it's actually pretty all right. It's a weird sandwich that I want now.
Yeah, a caramel bologna sandwich. Okay, so what would you build that with? Caramel bologna. I think you have to have like the whitest of breads.
Yeah, and maybe like an American cheese, nothing too flavorful, but
right.
A good milk factor, so it's like kind of nice and gooey.
Oh yeah, you'd want like a nice warm caramel.
Yeah.
Do you put anything else on it? I wouldn't put lettuce. So it's more like a grilled cheese. So you're making a grilled cheese with bologna and caramel sauce on it.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Could you put a spice in there? Not like a spice, like not like spice, but like is a jalapeno out of the question? Or, you know, something that's a little spicy.
Right. I think a jalapeno would be good. Or like this might sound a little weird, but jalapeno. I think a chipotle,
okay.
Like a smoked, so might smoked complement jalapeno. The caramel kind of well.
All right. Well, I'll make that for you next week.
Alrighty. Sounds good. Apu's then greeted by his neighbor, Kirk Van Houten, who warns Apu to stay out of his place if he doesn't want to lose at cribbage. And so Apu's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. But sad, pathetic Kirk offers to let Apu win because he's so lonely. And back in the Simpsons household, Bart and Lisa enjoy an episode of Inside the Actors Studio.
Welcome back to Inside the Actors Studio. We've met Rainer Wolfcastle, actor, novelist, barbecue sauce spokesman. Now can we meet McBain?
Let me get into character. Okay, I'm McBain. All right, Mendoza, I'll give you the Maxwell circuit if you put down my daughter.
Ooh. Oh, it's a pleasure to eat your lead, good sir.
Kids, we want to talk to you about something.
You might hear from your friends or co-workers that Apu isn't living at home anymore.
I just wish there was something we could do.
Fun bit of good old James Lipton.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time of the Lipton.
Yeah, the Lipton age. I remember him on a recurring episode of Arrested Development.
Yep.
His show on Sundance was very popular. Very much in the zeitgeist for like 2 years.
I think he was pretty popular until like he died a few years ago.
Yeah.
I love just Wolf Castle getting in character. And then bringing a load of guns to the set, killing Lipton. You could say that when McBain shot James Lipton, he was iced tea. Lipton iced tea. Okay. That's not working here.
Oh, boy.
Oh, and also I love Homer telling the kids, like, your friends are co-workers. Why would the kids care that the guy who runs the Quickie Mart is getting
right.
divorced?
I don't care if anybody's getting divorced, yeah. like, especially if I'm 10 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if my teacher's getting a divorce.
But that was kind of a big thing, I think, when we were kids, too. Like, if you found out someone's parents were getting divorced when you're, like, 10 years old, it was kind of weird, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think it's so, divorce is so common that, like, probably majority of half the kids in a classroom, their parents
are divorced.
Yeah. Whereas, like, when we were growing up, maybe one kid was from a divorced household.
Right.
The other 99% parents were just, tolerating. Yeah.
They were just unhappy.
Yeah. It's good that we've evolved a little bit as a society.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you'd be married, but you died at like 45 and you had 20 kids.
Ugh. I was going to say, dying at 45, that sounds pretty great. But all the kids, yeah, not so good.
Yeah. Well, half of them probably died too of cholera and chicken rabies.
Chicken rabies.
And here's the next meal.
Crunchy.
Steve, your mouth's watering a little bit, foaming up.
Nom, nom.
Anyway, so Marge then gets an idea. She asks Homer if he's thinking the same thing. And Homer says, you bet I am. And then he imagines hang gliding over a futuristic city, zapping the scared public with his laser gun, and tells the frightened people, you can run, but you can't glide. And then once his fantasy is done, Homer chants, USA, USA. And then Marge shares a plan with the family. Invite both Apu and Minjula to dinner, but don't tell them that the other one is coming. Has ever done a gag where, I know it's such like a common joke, I'm not saying it's joke jail, but where are you thinking what I'm thinking? And then, Homer's imagination is obviously not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But has there ever been one? Like, would a joke be funny if like when Marge asks Homer, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And then in his mind, he is thinking that the situation Marge is having, like the actual thinking, like Apu and Minjula coming over for dinner, like in Homer's mind. Have you ever done a joke where like they actually are thinking what the other person's thinking?
I don't think they have, but that would be fun to see like Marge's reaction to it. It's like, oh, yeah, that is what I was thinking.
There has to be a Simpsons gag like that.
I'm sure they've probably done it. We'll find it eventually.
Yeah. But also, again, this episode that I'm watching is just all cliche.
Very sitcom-y.
Making fun of like all those cliche sitcom moments.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting that with, like, this is almost now just Schwarzweiler's making a parody of the show that he helped create.
Yeah.
And like Homer just chanting USA, USA, like in no reference to anything, but it's a thing to do.
Right.
Because that became kind of a punchline that you would just out of nowhere, you would just start saying USA. Now, was it because of The Simpsons? Now, I don't think so.
I mean, I kind of feel like after 9/11, the overwhelming amount of patriotism that we felt that we needed to have, that like everything was USA, USA.
Yeah, we were very patriotic as a society back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, because we did so good with that, handling that. Yeah, not a political podcast.
No. Anyways, Homer also wants to invite Krusty, so another like Krusty callback. But as Marge reminds him off camera, Krusty is desperately an unhappy man. Also, we didn't play the clip, but like in that reading that she says off camera, like it sounds like Marge is saying, like, Homer, when we're off camera, like they're being filmed, like. That's one
right.
It's almost the same as like that Mary Todd joke in the beginning of the episode. So I hear Marge like, Homer, when we're off camera, I told you this guy Krusty's not good.
Yeah, he's very sad.
Yeah. But no, it means when Krusty's not on camera. Anyways, Marge hopes they can remind Apu and Minjula why they love each other in the first place. And if they don't, Homer imagines zapping them, much like the townsfolk of the future.
So that evening at the dinner table, the awkward silence is broken by Marge welcoming a special guest from Minjula. She asks if it's Apu's whore, but Marge says that the guest is even better. Homer whispers how great he thinks the night is going, while Marge wheels out a red wagon holding Bart, Lisa, and Maggie, dressed in cardboard boxes and a hose snout, portraying the god Ganesh, which is probably very offensive. who has four arms rather than the six that the Simpson children are displaying, and Apu feels that he is totally screwed.
I mean, yeah, it is pretty offensive, and the fact that Lisa doesn't point that out makes
right.
me wonder, did Schwartzwelder write this?
Yeah. Because, yeah, Lisa wouldn't go along with this.
No.
She would protest it. So Bart is the voice of Ganesh, ordering the unhappy couple to get back together, or else he'll suck their blood. Lisa tells Bart to stick to the script, and then they fight, causing the costume to fall apart. Maggie walks away, still wearing the elephant head, while Manjula speaks up.
I know you have all gone to a lot of trouble to meddle in my affairs, but you cannot change my mind with one night of blasphemy and store-bought tandoori. Or should I say blandoori?
Manjula, please. I have known we were meant to be together ever since my mother forced me to marry you. If you give me another chance, I'll do anything to make it up to you.
Come here, you. These are divorce papers. Consider yourself served.
Hey, Pally, where do you want the fudge mahal?
We didn't order that. Can I lick your fingers? Meet me at the mail slot.
So later, Raphael walks over to the mail slot. Homer's eyes closed, ready to lick the chocolatey fingers from his hands. Instead, Raphael pulls out his hog, and Homer starts sucking away. We'll go to that clip now.
Hey, Pally, I'm gonna come.
Well, it looks like they're getting divorced, Steve.
Looks like it.
And that's okay.
That's all right.
Is that the end of the episode?
Well, we have one final act.
Okay.
And it begins, as every final act does, at Divorce Law Specialists, which features a bronze statue of a man pushing a newly married couple apart. Inside, Manjula tells the divorce lawyer that Apu doesn't have a lot of money. The lawyer then cites the case of Lawyer v. Justice, which allows him to shake Apu by the ankles to see what falls out. It's a very Schwartzwaldian image.
Yeah.
So Manjula asks if her eight children will affect the settlement, and the lawyer chortles and then begins to dance on his desk. I love the lawyer guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Manjula then mentions that the attorney seems kind of familiar.
You remind me of the monkey man who slaughtered my family's chickens.
Yes, I get that a lot.
I have to think all of this over. I still have feelings for Apu.
I understand. Who is Apu?
The face of divorce is not as beautiful as I had hoped. Perhaps there is another way.
When will you humans learn that your feelings, as you call them, can stand in the way of big cash payoffs?
Manjula, come quick! The octuplet said their first words!
Mommy, will you let Daddy come back cookie?
Oh, they miss their father. Are you sure you don't want to take him back?
I love just the caricature at first when we see the divorce lawyer. Like, the voice is great. And you know, it's like he's obviously just like evil incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
And just how it slowly and slowly just turns into like non-human. And essentially, like, when will you humans learn?
Yeah.
How lawyers are all just evil right. demons.
Just horrible beings.
Yeah. Vile. That whole thing of like when Manjula was like, having eight kids, is that okay? Is that, you know, just like... He's like, hits the jackpot. It's great.
Right. I also love the children asking for their daddy to come back and cookie.
But also at the pause, too, it just sounds like, let daddy come.
Yeah. Can't we let daddy come?
Just let daddies come.
That's t-shirt.
Yep, that's a t-shirt. Just let daddies come. We'll save it for Father's Day. It'll be
there. You go.
Let daddy come. Get that t-shirt from our website, tpublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys. For your father, get him a let daddy come.
Yeah.
Shirt. Do we spell it C-U-M or C-O-M-E? So like you can get away with it, wear it in public, not being like...
Right, maybe that one. Maybe, yeah, C-O-M-E, but in like a white gooey font.
Let daddy come. But I want like it to be like the image of like Jesus with some kids. I don't know. Like, you know, that those like paintings where like, Jesus's arms are wide open.
And yeah.
There's like a bunch of like little kids around him. And then on top of the gooey font, let daddy come.
This is brilliant.
All right. You could also just have the shirt on front of the Jesus and the little kids. And then the back just says, let daddy come.
Yeah.
And then you like, you know, donate it to churches. Like, here, give this for your your parish.
Yeah.
Because they'll just think it's like clouds on the back. Let daddy come. And be like, oh, daddy, you know what you're talking about. The daddy god.
Yeah, the daddy god.
The daddy god. Should we start calling God the daddy god?
I think so, yeah. I think it's we're long overdue. We're being blasphemous by not calling him the daddy god.
Who is the daddy god?
I think it's might be Pedro Pascal.
Oh, yeah, that's a good daddy god.
Pedro is daddy, so yeah.
But who's the real Silver Fox, though?
Huh.
Because that's the true daddy god.
Right.
But I think you're right. Pedro Pascal, I mean, he's only a couple years older than us.
Right, but he's having such a moment.
Okay, we'll give him the title of daddy god.
All right, so Majula wants to forgive Apu, but doesn't want him to think that she's a doormat. Marge suggests a girl's night out, seeing some exotic male dancers at the Golden Banana. Majula would rather Apu suffer than herself. But Marge thinks about her own relationship and how when Homer screws up, she writes a list of ways he could make it up to her. She then shreds up that list and puts it in Homer's food. Majula agrees to write a list, but denies Marge's suggestion to write the list at the Golden Banana. And I gotta say, I love how much Marge wants to see some strippers and wants to see some dick.
So maybe that's the Golden Banana's like motto is the Golden Banana, making daddy come.
There you go. You can make it like a t-shirt.
So does it like about what?
Oh, I was just going to say, like, it's an advertisement for the Golden Banana establishment. And then on the back, it'll say, making daddy come.
And like established 2003, because that's when the episode came out.
Mm-hmm. 2002.
Oh, 2002, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like, we could have a big, like, Golden Banana.
I just imagine the gimmick is all the male strippers wear, like, bright yellow thongs.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the shaft is, like, yeah, and on the tip is, like, the tip of a banana, like, the stem.
Right.
And they all have to dance that way. Yeah, that's the Golden Banana. I like it. Steve, I think the Dancing Bear, a famous strip club that was in Portland, went out of business, but the building's there for sale. I think we can turn it into the Golden Banana.
Oh, yeah. There's always money in the banana stand.
Oh, the banana stand is what we'll call the like the champagne room.
Right.
So you guys quit your podcast? Yeah. What are you doing now? Oh, we opened a male strip club called the Golden Banana. I think you guys know you were gay. We're not.
No,
It was a funny joke from an episode of The Simpsons. So
we just thought, yeah.
Yeah. Come join us later this week. Well, the Battle of Endor is reenacted on stage here. The Golden Banana. Yeah, you do that too.
Why does that Ewok have an erection?
Oh, this is the adult reenactment.
Yeah.
Stormtroopers and Ewoks, fuck.
Oh, yeah.
We're just giving away all of our million-dollar ideas on this podcast.
That's one shot the Stormtrooper won't miss.
I think George Lucas will come.
I mean, when he sees our great show, I'm sure he will.
George Lucas, he's our daddy god. No, wait, Matt Groening, that's our daddy god.
Yeah, that's our daddy god.
As long as the strippers have nice feet. At the Bachelor's Armed Apartments, Apu chants over, under, round, and round so your feet won't touch the ground. Speaking of feet. Well, tying a noose to hang himself, he then examines his reincarnation chart to see what awaits him in the next life. First, he was a tiger, which is pretty cool. Then a snake. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Followed by a clod, who looks a lot like Alfred E. Newman. Then a goat with a hat. Like how he, a goat just with a hat. And finally, his current form. And then up next is a tapeworm. And then an assistant to Lauren Michaels.
So there's a long history of people who worked for Lauren Michaels who worked on Simpsons as well, including John Swartzwelder, George Meyer, John Vitti, Conan O'Brien, Ian Maxtogram, Greg Daniels, and Joel H. Cohen. And even Harry Shearer was a cast member in season 5 of SNL. And he did Lauren's voice in Homer to the Max.
I just love how the idea of you go from a tapeworm to the next thing you are is Lauren Michaels' assistant.
Yeah, slightly lower.
Yeah.
So Apu tells himself it's going to be a rough couple of lifetimes. And so before he can embrace the sweet kiss of death, Manjula, Marge, and Homer burst in. Manjula calls her husband a Brahma queen and then agrees to take Apu back, provided that he complete the following tasks.
Wait, so before we get to the tasks.
Yeah.
That means Apu will die and then become a tapeworm, but still like within our lifetime, because Lauren Michaels is still around.
Mm-hmm.
And also Lauren Michaels' hair is dark still. So, like, I mean, he's gray now, but it should be gray.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's like, it's really funny that Apu's going to die soon. That's all I'm saying. And then he'll be right. A tapeworm for a couple days. But then I have to fully reincarnate as a human being. So, like, he has to be born. So that assistant is probably in their 20s.
Well, Lorne Michaels can never die, so.
Oh, but who do you think should take over Lorne Michaels after he retires, Steve?
Oh, boy. Joe Piscopo.
Or let's think outside the box, Steve. Let's get someone who's never been on the show. How about Kevin Sorbo?
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Or Kirk Cameron would be great.
Oh, yeah. He's funny. He's got funny in his bones.
Maybe we get Willie Ames to be a cast member.
Hey, why not just bring Scott Baio, too?
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Live from Branson, Missouri. It's Sunday morning.
At least they'll finally name it correctly.
Yeah.
Musical guest, Morgan Wallen. And your host, Dean Cain. I'm excited for that, Steve.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the lists Apu has to, the task that Apu has to complete. We got one, break up with Squishy Girl, which is obviously a no-brainer.
Number two is lose weight.
I'm out.
Me too.
Get cartoon published in a New Yorker.
And four, legally change name to Slime Q Slime Dog.
Wear a name tag that says the same name. And Marge, of course, knows a great name tag place who does fabulous work.
So Homer then shows off his trainee name tag, which he got from Marta's place. And he and Apu are off to complete the task to forgiveness.
What's Homer's training for?
Huh, that's a good question. Maybe
husband of the year?
Maybe. Maybe it's maybe he's trying to take over Apu's job at the Quickie Mart.
He's already worked there.
That's true.
Wait, did Marge have that maid trainee, or did she just buy that off of the rack? Because that seems like one that you could just easily get off the rack. Like, you don't
right,
have to request
it's not custom.
To make a, yeah.
What I imagine is that, like, Marge is looking to get a name tag of her own made for whatever reason, and Homer was along with her, but he's getting impatient, so she just bought him a trainee tag to keep him occupied.
Because all the Bort ones were sold out?
Exactly.
Maybe it didn't have that cool red line. She like added that.
Yeah, I love that line. Not as good as my favorite thin blue line, but still pretty good. So Apu ends things with Annette, who accepts the breakup, saying they had fun. And Homer sees this as a great opportunity to point out to Apu that Annette likes him.
There was a deleted scene on the DVD, Steve, that it was real that Annette was also having an affair with Wiggum.
Oh.
So hopefully, I'm glad they deleted that because I don't want them to get divorced, Sarah and Wiggum.
No.
Because it'll make me feel bad.
Yeah. And I just don't want the cop to, you know, Annette can do better than the cop.
Yeah, of course. Unless it's Lou. Lou's pretty cool.
Yeah, Lou's pretty cool.
For a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Back at the Quickie Mart, Bart finds his frozen treat to be disgusting, and Apu tells him that he only smells smooshies, which sounds worse.
Yeah.
Come to Club Banana, where we serve smooshies and daddy's come.
And Wendell's.
And Wendell's. So we'll sell Wendell's and Smooshies. It'll be our signature cocktail. So when we have to call it Bar Rescue, John Taffer comes in. We'll be like, hey, we have a signature cocktail already. And we'll give John Taffer a good old show in the banana stand.
There you go.
The reason why they're selling the Smooshies instead of Squishies is because, you know, Squishies remind him of his misdeeds. Milhouse says that his Smooshie tastes like a shopping bag, while Lisa thinks hers tastes like dog fur. So, Steve, it's actually a standard Slurpee from 7-Eleven, but I soaked it in a shopping bag, like a paper shopping bag overnight, and put some dog fur in it and then refroze it. So here you go.
Still better than Mountain Dew.
Hey-o! See, you had to do a dumb joke like this episode.
Exactly.
Apu points to the hideous delivery man who takes Apu's insult as a challenge, giving him the come hither look. So, you know, Apu's not attracted to him. And that hideous delivery man just looks like me.
I know. I was like,
man. later at the 742 Evergreen Terrace, Homer rides on Apu's back until Apu realizes that it isn't on the list. And I like how it's the Homer like, wee! Like just the stock we like Dan probably didn't say that line for this episode. They just like put it in.
Right.
Homer states that it's been on his list for a long time to write a poo. Maybe he wrote like write a poo, but like in the sexual term. And then he was drunk. And he's like, oh, maybe I meant this.
Maybe. Yeah.
Or maybe he found a Marge's wish list. but yeah. So as he's writing Homer's writing a poo, he uses that incident as inspiration for a New Yorker cartoon, which it gets published. Hey, that was on the list.
Pretty good.
Apu is proud of his work, and Homer admits that he only bought the issue for Richard Avedon's artful photos of Lenny.
Very classy. Mm-hmm. So Apu then recreates a stage production of My Fair Lady using only his octuplet toddlers as the cast. And Julia checks that auction off the list, which sits right below Eat a Light Bulb. Lisa really appreciated all the roles filled by minority actors, but Bart didn't even notice.
Is that a Schwarzwelder commentary of how, like, in 2002, like, we were already kind of in that beginning talkings about how, like, there needs to be more diversity in casting, right?
Yeah.
So is it like Schwarzwelder being like against it in a way?
Let's just say that he probably won't be first in line to see the new Little Mermaid movie.
right. That's what I'm getting at. So he's probably like against all that.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, doesn't matter. They're fictional characters. They can be whatever the fuck they want to be.
Yeah.
Doesn't give bother me.
Voices. Yeah. Who cares?
I don't really give a shit. Is it hurting me? No. Then it's good.
Yeah.
Is it hurting people physically? No. Then we're fine. Find something else to be a whistleblower for, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the list now complete, Manjula allows Apu to move back in with his family and his never-ending disgrace. Homer has a caveat, and later, Apu and Manjula find themselves once again in their marital bed.
Wait. You forgot to eat a light bulb.
Oh, thank you very much, you big fat blubbermouth. Sorry. It's been a rough month.
Here you go.
Don't worry. I soaked it in the toilet to soften it up.
So, back in the old bed. I never realized it was so wide.
Yes, back to our marital closeness.
Maybe we can't rush things.
Oh, Apu, I want us to be a family again. But it will take some time. We will know when it feels right again.
Whenever you are ready.
The reunited couple share a kiss, and Homer watches through the window, standing on a ladder, once again shocked by what he's witnessing, and Homer hops backwards on the ladder, hopping away from Apu and Manjula's apartment and down the street, bringing that gag back. I like how this kind of ends, too. It's like, you know, typically when a couple gets back together on a TV show, everything's like, you know, peaches and cream and roses and sunshine, whatever, like... But the fact that, like, they're, like, back together, but they're going to work on it, they understand.
Yeah.
It's kind of a sweet way, like, a realistic way of a couple coming back together, not just like, all right, let's back to the status quo.
Yeah, I think it shows that, you know, relationships, you know, sometimes take some work. And even if things are reunited, it's not necessarily better. And it does take some time. So, yeah, I appreciate the emotional complexity of that.
And then we get just the funny gag of the episode, bring it back. And that's how you end an episode.
Excellent.
And this is how we end this episode. I mean, well, we're not ending it. We're going to just take a break and come back and then end it. Sound good, Steve?
Sounds like a plan.
All right. We'll be right back. And we're back. All right, Steve, let's wrap up this week's episode, The Sweetest Apu. We'll talk about our favorite jokes. Maybe there's an MVJ, some of our favorite scenes. What made us laugh? Give a full review, rank it maybe, then find out what we're watching next week. But before we do all of that, we're going to give a little gift, something from this episode that inspired us to say, here, enjoy this physical thing that I don't want, but you can have. So I guess I'll go first, Steve, because it would be weird for me to ask for it. But, you know, I figure you're a very learned person. You like to read because you're a nerd.
Sure.
That's why I got you a subscription to the New Yorker magazine so you can submit your own cartoons. And hopefully they get published.
Wow. That's a very nice gift for me, Greg. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I will collect.
And also here's also a noose.
Oh, well.
See if it's whatever you want to do with that. It's from a Pooh's collection.
Oh, boy. From the David Carradine collection.
Jesus Christ.
Classy. No, I will collect those New Yorkers and probably never read them, but I'll put them on my coffee table to look smarter than I actually am.
Awesome.
And it's funny, Craig, because I kind of got you something in the same realm.
A smushy?
Well, sort of. I know that you like to read, too, but, you know, sometimes you like different genres. But I also know that, you know, you don't always like to deal with the public. So I got you a big old pile of pornography. So you don't have to be shy about buying it at the Quickie Mart.
Well, then my other large pile of pornography won't be so lonely.
Exactly. Hell, you can put it on the curb and just write a used up pornography.
Thanks for the gift, Steve.
Thank you.
All right. What made you laugh from this episode?
Let's see. I like the two Johnny Carson references. The sure. Ooh, that's good adultery. And hey, ooh. I liked, you know, the hopping backwards on the ladder, or, you know, Homer walking right. backwards. It's fun. But I think if I have to give like a favorite scene in my MVJ, it's got to be the lawyer.
I was going to say the lawyer for mine, and the double entendre sitcom joke when they're playing badminton. Pretty fun stuff. Yeah, there's just a lot of very Schwartz Welder-y sitcom type of tropes that they're parodying in this episode. So it's all fun and games. Let's not forget the great appearance of the iced tea from Lipton himself, James Lipton.
Yeah. I do want to go back to and talk about some of the Civil War stuff.
Right.
The East Side was very funny. And let's not forget Abe Lincoln shooting himself in the head to start the war.
Oh, what a bunch of wacky scenes in this episode. Do you have a MVJ?
So I give it to the lawyer, or do I say,
I mean, Homer was just stupid, but also sometimes a little problematic in this episode. So it's hard to reward problematic behavior.
Yeah, the dream sequence was a little weird.
Right.
And it is kind of not a bad message, but the message with Barney was interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I think a demonic lawyer, I think that's my...
Yeah, right. I think that's the way to go. Yeah.
I hope he's on Tapped Out. Do you think his character's on Tapped?
Probably, yeah.
Does he have an action figure?
They have a name.
Does he have a name? Yeah. You don't need to have a name if you have your own action figure.
That's true.
Like in the original Star Wars movie, they were just putting out the toys, like a Hammerhead guy. That wasn't his name.
Right.
All those silly characters. But we'll just go with the evil lawyer demon.
Mm-hmm.
But did he have a name? Are you looking that up?
Yeah, he does not seem to have a name, or maybe no other appearance, but damn, he's fun.
Well, let's give him a name. How about
Dewey Cheatham?
And how?
Yeah.
All right, fine. He's officially Dewey Cheatham.
All righty.
Edwin Cheatham, but he goes by Dewey.
I like that. That's good.
Okay. All right, Steve, what did you think of this episode altogether? Give a nice little summary of your innermost secret thoughts.
All righty, Craig. It's a Schwartz Welder episode, so you know it's going to be good. Where does it fall in line with the rest of the canon of Schwartz Welder? Maybe not in the top 10 or 15, but I think it's a solid episode. It is a fun takedown of a lot of sitcom tropes, like the whole idea of somebody's getting divorced and we need to stop it. I thought that was fun. I think like a lot of the silliness is a good time, but is it, I don't know, like how does it like last? And I think, you know, they bring it up again about Apu's infidelity, and I think this is a good episode, maybe not a great episode. So if I have to give it a score, so I always feel that the squishy, in which Annette works for, the squishy is inspired by the 7-Eleven Slurpee, which was introduced in 1966. So if I were to give this a score out of 66, I'm going to give this a 45.
I think that's fair. Look, I agree with you that it's a very choppy episode, and we had a lot of fun watching it, and it kind of was reiterating that it's just feels like it's, let's just do every sitcom trope out there and then just parody it and then splice it together and put it, you know, into a 22 minute episode. There isn't much heart. There isn't much of heart. I mean, we did kind of agree at the end, though, that it was a very positive ending, that while Manjula and Apu do get back together, it's not all wine and roses, you know?
Right. It will take some time.
It'll take time to heal. So I did like that aspect of it. I just think, you know, we're in the throes of just really stupid ass Homer and very out there concepts of just like storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a very joke a minute, like make sure every line hits with this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. I think the for Schwartz Welder episodes, this is definitely like not on my top 10.
Yeah, and I think that also just speaks to how good he is, that, you know, you have a pretty good quality episode, but it still just breaks down to all the great stuff he's done.
I think it's because we're so used to watching like the newer episodes, and how I think that the quality of storytelling has just kind of elevated.
Mm-hmm.
Where it doesn't have to be slapsticky and so out there. That this era of The Simpsons was.
Right.
So now we're used to having, you know, a little more toned down Simpsons, and like Homer these days isn't like a total jerk or idiot. So I think that's kind of nice. And then kind of going back to seeing these episodes. Oh, I totally forgot. My MVJ was really the guy in the battlefield who wouldn't move, just have his arms crossed. That was my MVJ. I just saw a picture of him, so that's why I forgot about that one. But yeah, if I give this a ranking, like our favorite character besides Guy in the Civil War reenactment, the Civil War lasted a good old 4 years here in America. So out of four, I'll give this episode a 2.37.
That's fair, I think. I think that's fair.
All right. But Steve, that does mean we hate our lives and are ever not recording this podcast again.
That's true.
We're going to keep going.
Oh, boy.
And we're going to go and find out what we're watching next week. How would we do that?
Alrighty, and to do that, we're going to need that Wheel of Random.
Let's give it a spin to see what episode we're talking about. Well, season, I guess. Steve, hit the button.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do!
Woohoo! Alright, we have season 32.
Season 32.
Give that a spin for the episode number.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do! Woohoo!
Episode 19.
Season 32, episode 19.
Weren't we just talking about season 13, episode 19 today? Who are we? Steely Dan? Hey, 19. You just love the 19, I guess. All right, Steve. Season 32, if it helps you, this episode originally aired April 18th, 2021. So we're a year into the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And we probably talked about this episode, but we didn't actually review it.
Yeah, so April 18th. So I'm thinking, you know, it's right around tax time. And, you know, everyone loves to talk about taxes.
That's all we talk about.
Right. So I'm going to say that the title of the episode is Tax Facts and Big Old Racks.
I wish I knew what that was about. I could kind of figure it out. But Steve, you can't tell me. So you're wrong, of course.
Ah.
Always wrong. It's actually called Panic on the Streets of Springfield.
Huh.
Panic on the Streets of Springfield, written by Tim Long, directed by Matthew Nastuck. Steve, any idea what this one might be about?
Well, judging by the name, I feel like it might be the episode with Morrissey. That's the Smiths song, Panic on the Streets of London. But I don't know what the story is actually about. I just know that they make fun of them in it.
Well, you're absolutely right. So that means we don't have to do this podcast ever again. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Well, since you don't really know what it's about, I can't let you get off that easy, Steve.
All right, fine.
But you're right. It is the Morrissey song, a parody of the Smiths singer, Morrissey. Lisa gets an imaginary friend, depressed British singer from the 80s, guest voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch, who makes her feel much better about her friends. Meanwhile, Homer gets a vehicle with awesome torque and becomes a truck guy.
Oh, boy.
It just sounds like one of our tags at the end.
I know.
Homer becomes a truck guy.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so I swear we talked about this episode, but we didn't actually do a full in-depth episode because there's some controversy around it.
Yeah.
Even though it's not Morrissey, it's very much a Morrissey parody.
So right.
I guess I'll be excited to finally watch it.
Very curious about it. I have confused hopes for it, I think.
And no notes.
No notes.
Okay. All right, Steve. Well, I guess we're going to have to stick around next week for another episode. So will you. Yeah. But in the meantime, if you want to contact us on social medias like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, go ahead at 138 Simpsons or check our podcast out on YouTube at 138 Simpsons.
And you can always email us at 138simpsons@gmail.com. And hey, if you're so inclined, go to your favorite podcatching app and leave us 5 stars or the equivalent. But you can write a review, but it doesn't have to be a real review. Just tell us the list of things that would get you to forgive us for all of our infidelity.
And leave us a voicemail. Just go to the podcatching app, scroll down through the show's notes, and it'll say leave a voicemail. You can easily do that on a smartphone or on a computer. It'll just ring a phone number up. We won't pick up, but you can leave a message and we'll play it on the air. Ask us anything you want.
That's right. And hey, after you do all that, if you're like, hey, I could use some merch, you can go to our TeePublic store, teepublic.com/user/annoyedgridboys, and check out all the fun swag that we have there. And hey, thanks so much for listening.
Yes, thanks again for listening, and I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And when will you humans learn that your feelings, as you call them, stand in the way of big cash payoffs?
Can I lick your fingers? Meet me at the mail slot.